This thing on.
Okay, boys, you working? Hey. Okay.
Yeah, the needles are going. You see what I mean?
Yes, I do. I do. So when you see that cord, let me see if I'm going to repeat it back to you in my own phraseology, see if I've caught what you're saying. So that I just thought, the cord is a cord, as the, you know, you say it's linear or, you know, cord, and then there are the shades in between. But you're saying within that cord, different intervals suggest different multi-types of thought that you can superimpose on there or take as an essence itself out to
me. Yeah.
So, and that's what you prefer to do instead of see it as just a block.
Yeah, but I don't really see it, and I hear it more than anything, and I'm conscious of the interval. All at the same time. It's a... like I said earlier, Ted, I didn't invent it, I didn't strive to find it, I didn't hunt for it, it just evolved that way. It's like the tuning of the instrument itself. That evolved over a period of time.
Both evolved out of practical demands, shall we say.
Yeah.
You decided to do
it. Sure. And every note can be something else. And every triad can be something else. Every four-note voice can be something else, because every four-note voice contains four triads.
That thing you said in the book about the quartets and the quintet?
Sure. And then, then you have the duets in there. You've got lots of duets. And they're all important. And some of the... Oh, in some chordal structures, harmonic situations, one voice will be doing something and two voices in another area, another musical area, will be having an argument. They're doing a duet, but they're voicing their opinions. And there's a lot more than just a numbered notation or a lettered notation going on there. And I don't say that I think of those all at the same time. It's become one big ball of wax. I'm conscious of the interval. I'm conscious of the nucleus, what it's suggesting. The area it's being used in, maybe it's not A minor.
Maybe it's being used as a D dominant or a F sharp minor 7.
Yeah, or maybe it is just a way station. For the voices going someplace.
Like that chord with the two-thirds.
They're all in motion. In other words, the whole thing is in flux.
So that's how you decide what... Once you told me that every chord has what you... If I remember correctly, when I was taking lessons, you said every chord has a firstly and a secondly and all that.
That
was the way you referred to it.
Yeah, firstly, secondly, thirdly, fourthly.
And that's how you decide what to... I mean, like if you're supposed to be playing... In the substructure or subconscious level, if, like, say, doing an F sharp minor 7 chord at that point, then that chord, you might be thinking of it more as an F sharp, as the firstly name, so to speak, because as the substructure, still you'd be extracting little lines and such.
Yeah, that would be in the rudimentary stage, you know.
Is that how you determine, the firstly and secondly, or did I not catch it?
Yeah, but that's firstly, secondly, thirdly, and fourthly, that's very basic, and that's not original. My God, that's been used for years and years by many harmony and theory teachers. But the overall effect is more important to me than calling out notes or being conscious of what it actually is.
That statement there makes a lot of sense.
This note and that note, I don't care what they are, they're going to produce a certain flavor, a musical flavor.
Regardless of what
taste.
We call them.
Yeah. They're going to come up with some kind of chemistry all their own. They'll create a timbre all their own. Now you put another voice in, you may knock out some of that timbre, because now you got a timbre going here. See, they're gonna start to argue a little bit, see? And so you'll change the flavor of it, And the importance of the timber change is if you want something to stick out, you don't have to necessarily play it louder. Just start an argument. See? And they'll fight each other vibration-wise. See? They'll start to... they'll start to disagree because the beat will creep in there. And here goes the timber change. And
that creates more of a depth of... I mean, more of a wide sound
yes,
of the ears.
Yes, yes. In fact, I'll give you an example. One of the great composers said... Tchaikovsky, in one of his symphonies, I can't remember what symphony, so I don't want to be quoted on that. But anyway, a bevy of nine basses, the Philadelphia Orchestra was playing this, and the bass had the dominant voice, and it was the bass players weren't bearing down, but it stood out like a mop handle out of a shopping bag. And you know why? Eight of the basses were playing the right notes. I mean, seven of the basses were playing right on the money in unison. One bass was playing a half tone low, and one bass was playing a half tone sharp.
It was written that way.
Written that way. And the argument set up such a commotion in beat wise. That it shook the walls of the building,
and yet the essential sound that you heard was
you didn't hear
dynamically.
Them. Yeah, you didn't hear the one playing sharp and the one playing.
Isn't
flat.
That something?
Yeah,
I never heard of that before.
So,
that's great.
Well, that's something. I experienced that by looking at the score. My brother Fred had the score. I believe it's a fourth symphony, but I'm not sure. And I couldn't believe it. Because seven basses are right on the money, and two of them were, in other words, the two outside basses were all torn apart.
That's quite remarkable. I've never heard of something like that.
But they weren't playing quite as loud as the seven.
Well, that makes sense.
Oh yeah, yes. They're the
most. A little blank, huh?
Yes. The seven basses were marked a double piano. It was a soft passage.
The others were triple.
The other ones were triple piano. The other two.
That's a smart fellow, that Tchaikovsky. He must have found out probably by mistake one day or something too. Somebody played the wrong note and it sounded even better.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Something
yeah.
like that.
And Alan Roos did that on a record. On Jezebel, a record we made with Frankie Lane. There were nine guitars on that day.
Nine guitars.
Yeah. Barney Kessel, Al Hendrickson, myself, Alan Roos. Bob Bain.
I've got that kind of
Tiny Timberl, Richie Rocco, Howard Roberts.
Why'd they drag nine of you guys down there? No offense, I mean, there's...
Well, Mitch Miller produced the day. And so we walked through the door, and Mitch Miller said, I want you guys to play as lousy as you know how. Well, that rubbed Alan the wrong way, Alan Bruce. So he gave one of the flunkies, $10, and said, give me a bottle of scotch, and he proceeded to get loaded. And Alan played Jezebel the whole thing, either a half tone flat or a half tone sharp. He alternated, and it had a tremendous power. It added power to the other guitars.
It's on the record. It's on the,
it's on the record.
I'm going to go back and listen. I have that record.
There's one place you can hear it, just a little bit, but it's very fleeting. But
what about the idea of playing in two or three keys at the same time? Is that what you were alluding to before, or is that something other than we've discussed at the moment? Like when we talked about bringing in elements of C minor into C? Is there some, you want some, I got this from an article that I had seen with another guitar player, you know, that you mentioned that you said, even now I play, and it ended up with playing in all keys at the same time. Was it a misquote, George, or is that
no,
something
I don't
misquote.
Understand? No, Ted, it's like I said earlier, within the sacred circle are all the 12 keys.
Right.
And so I think in those, I'm conscious of those keys all the time, since they all contain each other. One note contains every other note, so the keys have to contain each other. So that leaves you absolutely a mental freedom. You can do anything you want and go any place you want as long as it's done with taste.
So you're saying you might just dip into any key for a second. It doesn't mean literally at the same time, but it means concurrently, successfully, you might suddenly just, because this note suggests that, suddenly you're here, like Art Tatum, suddenly he's here, suddenly
he's
here.
Well, a good example is that, of course, this is all locked into a device now, and it's going to be in the third volume. You play a G scale in tenths, and then play an E flat scale against it.
It's the soprano line at the tenth.
Yeah, Now that's da 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 da. That's straight, basic, right up the scale. See,
Seems like, of course,
that's driving it into the ground. You know, because you wouldn't. You may just use two sections of that, or two steps of that, or two stations of that, and then change it. It may go to another E flat. May go to another key. See, or maybe the G pop. Maybe the G scale will change. But they will be in different keys, and yet they'll make perfect sense.
But not like nobody's playing it all 12 at the same time, literally at the same time.
No, well, you might as well take a 2x4 and put it on the 88 keys on the piano, you know. There's all 12 at the same time.
You see why I had to ask you about
that?
Sure.
I don't think I explained that very well, Ted, but I think you know what I mean.
Oh, you did explain this very well. But I think the earlier article probably condensed, like you said, they chopped and stuff, so it made it sound a little different.
Yes, that's probably the article that made me look like a fool.
No, they didn't make you look like a fool.
I have it in a file. I saved the one that was so bad. I have the original and then the one they printed. And it was absolutely ludicrous. You know, I was telling Ted earlier, this is not exact, but it was something as stupid as this. Did you know that C and E flat are two different keys? A very dumb remark, because they edited it with the scissors, you know, instead of by meaning.
I'm going to ask you a devil's advocate question here, just because I know I'd love to hear what you have to say about this. I know generally what may happen, but you have some unique ideas about tonality, and there are those who say that tone music is dead or exhausted. Would you care to respond to that?
There are those that say
tone music is dead. That it's big. We've exhausted the possibilities. This is what they've said.
Well,
and I know in your book.
I have an answer to that, and it's written over here.
Is that the 364 billion? Is that the?
Where does sound effect end and tonality begin? See, now I don't mean to answer a question with a question, but this is related to what you asked. Yeah, I think this way, that there are those that are more interested in sound effect than music.
What's the distinction between the two? Excuse me.
The distinction is tonality, quality of tone, and notation, as against a sharp noise, a high-pitched noise, a chalk squeak on a blackboard, a shotgun, or potatoes falling down the cellar steps. Those are sound effects. You know, fire effect. All right, now.
So where does it end? Where is the line?
Well, I think I can't agree with the tone being dead, because when that day arrives, that's the end of music. Because music is all tone. It has to be. Except this isn't. That's a piece of music, but it hasn't said anything yet. It hasn't said anything yet. Somebody's got to reproduce it. But you see what I'm saying?
What about atonal? Let me just inject the atonal component, because it may enrich this whole area of thought. I was going to next ask you, what's the difference, your minor distinction, between tonal and atonal music? And that's atonal might be the bridge between noise or sound effects and tonal. And
well,
kind of a tough question.
The some of the atonal music that has been written almost borders on the use of sound effects, but the sound effects produced by some of the abstract atonal music doesn't create a noise like hitting that table. They're using notation, but the explosion, the sound effect, takes place in the mind through these.
Similar effect, as you're saying, on the beat?
Yes. It creates a sound effect in the mind. And that part bothers me. Now, I've heard some atonal stuff that was pleasing, full of surprises and rather interesting. But I don't. Maybe I'm old-fashioned, but I couldn't stand listening to a lot of it.
Not
24 hours a day, you know, because I would long to hear. Long before the 24-hour period was over, I would long to hear a simple progression where the voices had some continuity, where they were friendly and they were having a little love affair with each other, and not abstractly trying to blow your mind.
Good, very well put. Eric Korngold, the film composer, he agreed with you. He's quite a musical man.
And getting back to sound effects, you ever hear any Cage?
Just for a few. I turned it off. It wasn't my cup of tea.
No, not mine either. And yet, Carnegie Hall, you know, he gave a concert there and he raved about it. You know,
like I said, well, I won't go.
Yeah, in one of the concerts. He did in Carnegie Hall. He had a. Do you remember the cherry bombs? The powerful firecracker. He put one in a typewriter and blew it up. It was part of the score. Can you imagine the percussionist had to load a typewriter with a cherry bomb?
Yeah, I loaned somebody $850 to go see that.
Oh, you did. Oh, geez. That's funny, kid.
Here's another one. Just an area of thought. Some musicians have decided that because the sharp 11 is part of nature's overtone series, more so than the 11, it comes first and all that, that the Lydian scale, which contains this note, should be the basis of our tonal system and not the major scale. How do you feel about that?
I think it should stay right where it is because it's already a staunch member of the notation family.
But some people say that we're missing the boat, that it should be the center, not the major scale, not the white keys that... You know, we're missing it. It's really the F white keys. George Russell in particular, the Lydian chromatic concept and all that. There's a whole school of thought on that.
Yeah. Well, you know what that's similar to? A statement like that is similar to if the three of us went someplace to a restaurant and Ed ordered a ham sandwich and you ordered a hamburger and I ordered a cheese melt. And the waitress stands there and writes it down and says, "Oh no, we'll change the order. I'm going to have a hamburger." And then Ed decided, "Oh yeah, change mine too. I'm going to have a cheese melt." She faces and writes that down, and you're going to have some.
So we ended up with the.
All she had to do was change the order one person, and it's the same damn order. So the raised 11th and this. Oh, but there are already all these intervals. Nothing should be used all the time. And I don't, like they say, I had one fellow ask me, he said, are you into fourths yet?
Into fourths.
So this was a guitar player at Sportsman's Lodge the other night. And
I said, did you?
No, they had the big band reunion there Monday night. And so... I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, you know, the coming thing is fourths." I said, "The coming thing?" I said, I didn't know they ever left. I'm behind the times. I didn't know they ever left. So everything is usable, and if it's used intelligently, every Every notation you can think of is a bona fide member of the family, musical family, and anything overdone becomes boring.
And we've chosen the major scale as our starting point in our tonal system, and we could have just as easily started somewhere else. We'd happen to look, human beings enjoy
well,
that sound.
Well, now, my concept on that is that the major scale didn't start the thing.
I agree with you there. From history, it
shows. The mother scale is the chromatic scale.
Oh, I see.
All scales are born of the chromatic. Every musical attitude, everything, is born of the chromatic scale. Since piano, guitar, and harp, and organ, we're not in quarter tones yet. Did you ever play a quarter tone guitar? I did once.
I've heard
well, the frets are so
like
close
that, but
together.
It didn't seem practical to me for
oh,
anything
no,
I was after.
Well, the distance between frets is ridiculous. You got halfway up the fingerboard, and you think you're right next to the bridge. You know,
it seemed like an enormous amount of work to achieve something that wasn't worth the time.
Well, and it's ridiculous because quarter tone harmony sounds just plain out of tone. I had a demonstration on that once, and this guy was beaming from ear to ear, and all and my brother Bob was there too. And we got outside. We just decided this guy had a lousy ear. He thought it sounded good. It was just plain out of tune. That's all. The most important scale is the chromatic scale.
That's good.
Because that's why I stress it through the textbooks. Because if you play the instrument chromatically, you can play what comes into your head within the physical limits of the hand. That's the only barrier. Is the limits of the hand.
And you look at the major scale as being a selection process from the chromatic scale, yes?
Oh, the major scale is the chromatic scale with some of the notes left out, that's all.
And likewise all the scale.
All of
them. Other than any less than 12.
One fellow wrote an article and he said, I wrote out over 100 minor scales. And, of course, that's fun. That's an academic exercise. You know, see how many things you can make out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But he was confined, naturally, on the piano, he was confined to the 12 tones, one octave of the chromatic scale. And so that is the most important scale, because that's where everything else comes from.